interesting. Where were you born?
In Dawn, Manitoba.
Let's see.
In 1930.
Okay. When did you come to Hazelton?
In 1952, in July, beginning of.
Why did you come here?
Well, the year before, my mother and I had come to Hazelton first, and I was selling books then for the summer and money to go back to school. And while I was in Alberta going to school, during the next year, like in the early spring, my folks moved here. So when I came home from school, then I came to Hazelton.
So how old are you then?
I was just turning 8.
So will you finish school?
As much school as I ever got. I just had finished grade 10.
So you didn't take any more?
No, I didn't go to school anymore.
Where did you live when you moved here?
Well, first of all, we came to Marty Allen's place. And they had a cabin there, a two-room cabin that they often let people in. It's burnt down now, but my first day in there, and so that's where I came when I came home from school.
How long did you stay there?
Well, we stayed there till fall at Allen's, and I helped them dig potatoes and stuff like that. And then after that, for the winter, we moved up to the place Dr. Kuntz owns now. Do you want to know next, Mel?
Did you have to build out a property, or was there one already there?
No, I lived there for the winter and made a deal to feed the Higgins horses and zoned that then. And we made a deal to feed them for the winter for living there. And that was sort of how I got to know my husband. He was looking at horses. And actually, it was kind of a funny little thing. Once when we were going for a walk was when we first discovered that empty house. We didn't really know who owned it or anything. And it's a lot of how in the old days, it was just open. And we were looking for these, I believe. We'd driven so far, and then we were walking, looking for Larry's, my dad and mother and I. And we stopped in there. Some dishes in the cupboard. The Hagen boys had been batching some. And there was a really pretty little china pitcher, cream pitcher, and it had roses on it. It was real china. It was so cute. And I said, boy, I'd marry the man that owned that. And sure enough, I did. Quite prophetic. But we lived there for the week. And then in the thing, my folks had found a place to buy down on McKee Road. They bought Mrs. Breckenden's farm. I don't know who owns it now. But they owned it for a number of years. And the next fall, in September, you and I were married at that place down on Wanga.
How long did you live there?
Well, I just lived there a few months from spring break. Like they moved at Easter time and they got married in September. But my folks lived there must have been 10, 12 years.
So after that you moved
but
here?
Then after that I was married. We lived up in a pole camp about 4 miles up the skin of here. In the winter Norman was taking out poles. We didn't own this place then. His brother George did. And we had the Hebner place up there, as we called it, where Dr. Kuntz lives now. And so some summers we lived there, and some summers we lived here. And our first child was while we were living here, Lars. He still lives just down the road. And then we lived for a whole year up at the place where Dr. Kuntz lives, and that's when Ruthie was little, my daughter. And then after that we went to town, and we lived in 2 Mile area for about 10 years, lived up on the hill. Cynthia Avenue School up there. I don't remember who owns that place now. She works teacher, and he works for the Indian Department or something.
Sheila and Dylan? Ryan? The Ryans?
Yeah, Ryans. That was the place. We lived for 13 years. We lived down in 2 miles for a couple of years, and then in fact, I guess it was more than that. Actually, it was about 4 years we lived down there. We lived there for about 13 years. While we were living there, we bought this place from Norman's George. And this place, actually, was Norman's father and mother's homestead. They lived here from when he was just little. My husband was born at Hazleton. Actually, you should be in with him because he's a real old timer.
Is he a generation?
His father and mother, well, his father in particular was one of the early pioneers in this town. Came just after the love.
What was his name?
Lars Hagen. What? Our oldest son is married, or that's married and lives down here. His name is Grandma. Mm-hmm. Lars Hagen. Everybody called him Louie, though. He was a real parent. They had this as a homestead. Mm-hmm. Lived here. So then after we lived on the hill in 2 miles, the rest of us were born here. We were 5. Then we moved up. And we've been out here 11 years. This all 31.
Let's see. So did you know anyone who was working in Garth Brown here?
Well, I know Marty Allen, and he worked on the telegraph line. But I didn't come here till they had finished actually doing anything on the telegraph line.
I see.
But certainly my husband knew all about that sort of thing.
When's a convenient time to him?
Well, it would probably have to be in the evening or Sunday, and you don't do this Sunday.
Yeah,
day,
we
do
at least work on, and I never talk to different people.
Yeah.
Because he would probably be quite willing to be interviewed too. Mm-hmm. And he would remember a lot of these people. Well, I think Simpson worked on it too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Not putting it in, but I think he was a lineman on the telegraph line, and I knew him. When I was first married, he worked at a telephone company, and he would come and put phones in and take them and so forth when we needed them. And in those days, the whole Hazleton phone book wasn't part of a big one like it is now. It was one little folded sheet. It was white cardboard. All the Hazleton phones were on it. And Kispiok's phones were separate, and we were long distance. And we had 25 cents every time we phoned anybody but on the line up here. And I think the whole valley was on the same line. And hardly ever get on it because it was always busy. And you had to ring your code, like you didn't.
I remember that. We had short. It was our phone number.
Yeah. It was
a
letter.
Everybody heard it.
Right. It was a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a code. There was like one of ours was to get the operator. And then she would hook you up to me and Tom. And Tom was the same as far as that goes. There'd be 4, 5, 7 people on a line, a party line. And they could all ring each other, just ringing it. Like two longs and a short, or two shorts, and it went up to about K or something like that in the alphabet for the signals. And everybody on the line would hear it ring, and it was ringing. And then you'd just pick out your own. I remember when we lived in 2 miles, our phone was 174. That was our phone. And I don't remember what K, I think it was long, short, long, but I'm not really sure. But that way everybody phoned. But when you phoned from out here, you had to pay 25 cents. So people were pretty careful about phoning to town. 25 cents were a lot more scarce then than they are now. But On up here, everybody talked to each other really often. Phone up. Then when people were finished, so that others would know you were through, you'd just give a little wee short ring off, they called it. Somebody else would grab it quick and ring they wanted to.
Did you have a monthly bill with the month, or did you just pay it?
No, it came as a bill, the same as now. Mm-hmm. And there would be all your calls listed to you.
Is that as far as you can call? Or is just too
no, you could call long distance too. But you had to do it all through the office. And there was a big old building that's gone now, right close to the Indian Sea.
Big red one?
Yeah, a big red. It had Imatuwik or something on the outside. Mm-hmm. And that's where the operators, it was actually I forget what they call it. Anyway, a board and everything, right? Mm-hmm.
How many operators took them in? Just one?
Just one at a time, that's all. It was one at a time. And there was three or four girls, or five like that. Some worked part-time, some worked full-time. They'd take 8-hour shifts through the night and everything.
Do you know the operator that was there?
I don't know.
Someone mentioned it was Jean Sterrett.
That could have been, because she was still an operator. I well with Jean being there. Mm-hmm. Always very obliging and very nice. You could tell which girls were on by their voice, of course, because you got to know they were just local.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number, please. And you tell them your number.
What was the industry that people... Or where did most people work when you came here?
Well, it was about now. There was quite a, farming in there, a lot of people, especially in the valley here.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of them did some sort of bush work in the winter. And Norman Cedar Poles, would get a limb of forestry for sale. They called it a limit then, but now they always call it sales. Mm-hmm. And you would bid on it, the same do for the small business sales now. But instead of defining it and putting it up like they do now, the men would go in a little spot
mm-hmm.
and figure out about how much they thought they could pay the down payment of the stumpage on and so forth, and then they'd go to Wall Street and put up the sale. Well, then other people could bid on it and willing to pay more than what they called the upset price on the stumpage.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes somebody would bid you up so you had more and you'd be mad at them for a while. But people that were poor would never go and bid on each other. They had principle that believed in treating their neighbor as well, so they wouldn't go and bid you up. See, if you put it up, most would leave you alone and let you get it for the upset price and block it. There was lots of little sawmills in the area too, that they ran mostly just in the wintertime.
How come it was only logging in the wintertime?
Well, there's some people, we did some logging in the summer too. Sometimes they would do poles in the summer and get them all decked up. And then in the winter, poles peel easy. They peeled them by hand in the bush in those days. They'd cut the tree down and take it to terrace and put it through a shaver.
Mm-hmm.
To get the peeling off, but in those days everybody peeled hand in the bush, and then they'd haul them in the winter. And oftentimes you'd have to sleigh haul them with horses. That's what we did. We still were logging with horses when Norman was taking up hold, and they'd haul them down from the little landing in the bush to a bigger place where the truck would come. And Scotty Smith and Ward Marshall had a trucking business then. Days, and they did most of the pole hauling. And Charlie Smith, who lives on the road there, was a driver even then, and I think he still drives a log truck now. But he really used to come up when we were about 4 miles up here up the steep and haul out our poles for us in the winter. But a lot of people sort of, because swampy places, like areas, and you did hear gravel trucks and cats. Nobody hardly had cats then. Roads, big truck roads. It was a lot of work to make a truck road.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people would only haul in the winter. Those were frozen up and snow on them to smooth them out a bit. And we'd go out and sand at night so the trucks could get up the hills and put some sand on. Things like that. It was much better now.
Right. Was there electricity out in the valley when you first came here?
No, there wasn't at all.
How long was it before you got it out?
Well, they only got power. I forget the year when they got it. But it was when we were living in Tuma. And maybe someone else has already told you how the valley went. Everybody went to bed. That all the farmers in the valley here worked on it themselves. They took out the poles and they got permission. Hydro would never let you do that now. But then they let them. And they cleared out along the road and did most of the work. So it cost much less. And then all Hydro had to do was come and string it and bring it. And every farm that wanted it got it. So I think we already owned this then, this place. So when there was an opportunity, we said, sure, we'll take the power. You have to take it, but you were smart to do it because never again would you power that inexpensively. They let us pay it off by the month, and I think we paid $7 a month for years, I don't remember how many, and that paid for to have power and to come right into the place here. It's really an excellent opportunity for the valley to get power, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that many years ago since without power. Before that we used gas lamps, Coleman lanterns. That was the bubble chore that every housewife hated. I know myself, wait till it was just about dark outside and finally I had myself out there to put the gas in the lamp and freeze your fingers doing it because gas is so cold, and then boom, pump it up and light it. And they were kind of scary things. Have any of you lit a common gas lantern? Well, you're lucky because when they're cold, that usually it all flares up first and gets a big fire and it settles down to burning. That was that dreaded moment of the day when it finally got so dark you had to go and get your lantern fixed up and light it. And usually it lasted a whole evening, but not much more than that because it got dark just as early as it does now. And in the winter with the long evenings, if you stayed up, well then sometimes your lantern would flicker up till 10:30, 11 o'clock and be out of gas. That was a real thing then to have to go out and fill it at night. But usually by then your husband was home, so you'd make him.
Did you have any access to the family?
Oh, I never ever really did. But also they really get going and I'd have to throw the thing out in the yard. Thought of a better humor. Quit flaring all things. But I did have a bad experience once from in 2 Mile. We didn't even have power in 2 Mile there yet then. And I was ironing with the gas iron. Have you ever seen that? Well, that was... I don't anymore. But then, and it was really a great improvement over the flat iron. You've probably seen them. That you put on the stove and warmed them up, and then they had a handle that clicked on or fitted over iron until it was cold and put it back and get another one. And it would spit on your finger, you know, tip it, and if it sizzled, you know it was hot enough. That's how people tested the iron, if it was hot enough. And if you wanted them really hot, put an iron frying pan over them on the stove, then they'd really, really hot. And then just lift that and take one out and iron it and put it in. And everybody had that kind here then. But I thought it was a wonderful day when I got a gas iron. They were a Coleman thing built by the Coleman Company. And there was a wooden bowl, and it was a fairly good size, almost the size of an electric. And then on this end, there was a connection with the generator. That was just like a generator on a Coleman lantern. And then there was a little tank that held about of a cup or a cup and a half of the gas. And to get that thing pumped up, you always have to put air in to force it out. That's why you have to pump the lanterns too. Or besides lanterns, some people had a lamp that had two wicks, mantles, instead of one with the lantern. Then you'd hang it in the ceiling, and it would put light all over it. It was really nice. That was a lamp, you'd call it a gas. But anyway, this iron, I discovered, or somebody told me, that if you didn't use up all the gas in it, it would get kind of hot, too. After several times, some of the gas would get kind of sour, and then you'd have a level with your iron. It wouldn't burn, and gave you nothing but hot. So they said, when you're through, or before you start again, ironing, just empty out the sour gas, the old gas, put fresh each time, and it really worked. It worked way better. But I would just dump it into the slop bucket I had, because we didn't have sinks, a lot of people water, because if you don't have power, how do you drain water unless you have a gravity system? But most of us water out of a well, we carried it in the bucket. So we always had a pail to carry out your wastewater, kept it by the wash basin. And when you're through washing, you dump it in there, see? Well, this one day I always just dumped the stale gas, however, it wouldn't be very much, 2 or 3 tablespoons, but you know how inflammable it is. Well, I had dumped my iron in there, the gas, and it was probably a little more than usual. Well, then to light this thing, you did match the same as you do lanterns and lamps, Coleman gas one. And after I lit the iron and got it going, I just flicked the hatch into the slop bucket, forgetting the gas floating on the top. And like I say, it was a little more than you. Well, boy, in just that, there was flames just out of the bucket right to the ceiling. Could have burnt the place down. The wits out of me. Now, I can't remember exactly. I think I threw something and smothered it. It's no good putting water on it. It was burning on top of it. Water won't put gas out. But I think I threw something over and smothered it and then packed the thing outside. It could have been the end of the house. But live and learn. Try that one again.
Did you go on a honeymoon when you got married?
Yes, we did. Far away is Fort St. James. Believe it or not. We went camping because we didn't have all that much money. Norman had, just before we got married, he bought his first little deer cat. It was just a little tiny thing. We found marvelous, but compared to the D8s and things he has now, it's nothing. But anyway, he was paying for that, so we had a lot of money to go on a honeymoon. But we decided he had a pickup, a Red Chef pickup, and we decided we'd go to Fort St. James. She liked, he had a friend that was living part-time still at Cape. It was already, the mine was closed there then. It's a mercury mine. But this man lived there. He had a nice home to work in Chi Lake. He was a prospector for Consolidated Mine Building or something like that. He was a nice fellow, and so Norm wanted to just go on him, and we wanted to see the country, so that's where we went. We were gone about 10 days. But something really bad happened to us. We stayed at Smithers, at a motel room at the Bulkley Hotel. After our wedding, we got that far. And even on the way to Smithers, the tires weren't too new on his pickup. And I don't think we had one flat or two on the way to Smithers after the wedding. And all through our honeymoon, we had nothing but flat tires. We were parked along the road because we couldn't afford to go to a garage and get putting boots in and mending tires. We had 10 or 12 just in the 10 days. So that's about all. It was half flat tires. But we would have had some extra to maybe buy a couple new tires, but there was a circus in Smithers the next day we were married. So we thought before we continued on our way, we'd go and see circus. Well, two green kids. I was being enormous, 22, and we hadn't had much experience, and we went by this place where they were doing all these gambling things, you know, they have these con guys. Well, they sure are some greenhorns. They hollered us over there, and boy, sucked us in, I'll tell you. They let us win for a while, like they always do. And then pretty soon they had all of our practically. We just barely had enough for gas. Fortunately, we brought almost all the food we needed with us. I had lots of things and had a big garden and done lots of canning. And Norman shot some grouse and things like that. So we had enough food. We almost would have had to come home if we hadn't have had that a lot. That's why we couldn't afford to buy a tire or two. The guy at the circus got all of our money. And Irene was so upset by the time I knew he must have gotten nearly all the money. And it wasn't all that much because you could do a lot more with money 32 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he got about $55. But, you know, guys would work probably for $100 a month. And that was a lot more money than it is now by... I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you could do more with it, a lot more buying power. And I was just crying. I said, there, now you've got all our honeymoon money. Well, he said, anybody that's old enough to be married is old enough to be responsible for what they do. And he wasn't the least bit sympathetic. But we learned a lesson. Neither of us have ever gambled it since. Not yet.
Did anyone give you a shivery when you got married?
Oh, you did.
Lucky man.
Did you ever get?
No, I never did do that. We were married out at the place along Mesquina there on the way to Kip. We were married at home.
Mm. Married?
The Reverend Ian Arrow, United Church minister. From Hazleton, and he came out there, and they had just made the road up the big hill, the back road to Kenwaka, mm-hmm. just about a month before we got married. Before that, we had to go across from mm-hmm. Hilltown. It used to be down on what they call river there. You could go down the river, and there was a ferry went across that was just that current. There was a lot of those little current ferries in those days. I just took it across on a cable. Then yeah. you drove up the hill at the end and came out about at the, what we called the Michael Enko place. I mm-hmm. think, you know, John Sterrett might live there. They did for a while. I know they owned it. I don't know if they still own it.
There are some Sterretts living out there, but I don't know.
I think that's them. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's the place. That's about where you came. No, it wasn't. It was, that was halfway. It was right about, let's see, I don't know who lives on that
the
side.
The Forsythes?
About there, some about there. Mm-hmm. Between Forsythes and Birkenstocks. Mm-hmm. Not Birkenstocks, I mean, Bovalier. Mm-hmm. Somewhere right about there is where the ferry came up on the other side. Well, just a month or so before we were married, they made the road big hill. And then past the Forsythes are, and then down and along the riverbank by those farms that are still there. Mm. And that road, it rained, just poured rain the day we heard from. Started in the night, and it just absolutely poured all day. And that road was just about impassable with mud because it was loose. And some girls that I had, of mine that I had invited to the wedding came from Burns Lake. And the preacher through the mud, and he finally got there.
What was your maiden name before you got married?
Bigham.
Pardon?
Bigham, B-I-G-H-A-M. Mm-hmm.
Did most people have cars up there when you came here?
Yes. 32 go. Almost everybody had some sort of vehicle. A few people didn't. Mm. Just the same as now.
How was the road out?
The road out was fine in the summer, mm-hmm. but in the spring and the fall, there was times when it was impassable. You couldn't get to town. Mud holes would work up, and then you had to stay home.
So how often would you go into town? Or in the summer?
Well, in the summer, We didn't, we never went that, not like we do now. In the summer we go every 2 weeks, mm-hmm. just to get groceries we needed or something. And in the winter, we often didn't even hardly go that often, maybe every 3 weeks or a month, because we'd be up in the cold camp. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like a long way. We just didn't go to town and do that.
What schools did you show me about it?
Well, Owen always went to the Seventh Day Adventist Church School.
Okay. Was it just whites that went to the school, or the Indians too?
Sometimes there were some Indian kids that would come. Mm-hmm. There were some when, for a while there were families that came to our church and their kids came. Business in Old Town. And two main grocery stores then. That was our sergeant. Well, actually. And the Bay, the same as now. And then Mountains had the store. That's that. Somebody's renovating the building.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it up. And that was the number that Matt Miles had. He had groceries and a mixed variety, a general store. For the first years I was here, well then he let the groceries go, and then he just had a hardware there till he went.
Mm.
But that was the main grocery stores in Hazel at that time. And a corner of it was rented to the post office. Mm.
How long ago did that store close?
Oh, the last thing I remember buying from was a table and chair set, a chrome set, chrome chairs, and that was the time Calvin was born, so too long after that that Matt closed up, so it would be about 21 years since he closed down when he retired.
What were the prices?
Well, certainly things were much, much cheaper than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
I've often thought about it and wondered, for the amount you have now, if you actually had more buying power or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, with the great amount more money you know, if you can buy more things even at the high prices. I know one thing, food prices take a much bigger share paycheck now than they did then. Food wasn't even an item in comparison even to how much you made as it is now.
Was that because more people had gardens?
Well, that helped. And I've always done a lot of new things. But even as much as 10 years ago, well, 12 years ago, prices hadn't started to just double and everything like they have. Cost of living for gas, for your car,
mm-hmm.
and for food are really in proportion to how much you make. It takes a big percentage, I would say, of your paycheck now than it did then. If people were a little bit careful and didn't want to eat too high off the hog, as my husband always used to say, that was an experience, a little high off the hog, then you could do a lot more going on trips and it's a lot better and everything with the amount of money you had left for after buying food than you can now.
Mm,
thanks.
Were there any community events that you participated in, like May Day or First of July?
Well, the Valley always had a picnic on the 1st of July. That was the farmers people. And we always went to that.
What kind of things would you do?
Oh, eat, mainly.
With any games?
Oh, yeah. They'd have some races and things like the kids, and usually a big ball game. All the general things like that that they do at picnic. Mm. Sometimes the men used to do a little bit of wrestling and things too in the valley. Mind you, the valley picnic didn't last many years after we were here. It started on a fade away. Mm. Probably about the time we moved to town, I'd say. Then they started having the rodeo. Actually, the first rodeo. I guess they've had a few before that, but the regular one, that they've had one almost ever since that, was the first, the year we were married, mm-hmm. in 1953. That was actually the first one, and they've hardly missed since then of having a rodeo, but it used to be timber. Always. It was a week before our wedding. The last time my husband rode was the week before we were married, but I was afraid, so I didn't let him ride it. Up till then, he used to have a Telfa barbecue and rodeo, too. He'd always go there. And they used to have one at Kispiot Lake, too, I understand.
Hmm.
Years and years before I ever here. And he used to ride there, too. He loved to ride there. And ride the bucking horses and everything. And one year, he won the all-round cowboy award. But that was the first rodeo that started the regular ones in the valley there, and then we built the hall. So then that, when the rodeo got to be the big thing, I think that's kind of when the picnic died. But the Kispiot's Valley 1st of July picnic was a well-attended event. The town people came out too. And all the valley ladies were really upset. They just kind
of
laden to the picnic. Oh, you could eat till you were sick if you wanted to. They just have it all set out there. Just poodles of food. Then everybody would come.
Where would they hold that?
It was up at the same grounds where the rodeo grounds are.
Let's see right there.
I'm sure they had a ball game always too.
How many people lived here in you? Approximately.
Oh. In numbers, I really don't know. There wasn't as many. I'm sure the valley is a lot populated now than it was then.
You know a lot of people, or did you just know just your surrounding name?
No, at that time, it didn't take you long to get to know any of the valley. Everybody knew everybody. Now we don't anymore, there's no doubt. But then, only one always, as new people would come, being as he was raised here, he'd soon get to know them. He'd call by and see them. Everybody knew everything. Mm. It was mainly Hagen's Wookiees, Campbell, and then their kids. You know, all the connections. There were other people too, but most of them were connections. And a few bachelors too, here and there.
Is that Aspislet still around? Denise's brother? And not Denise's brother's brother, is it?
Oscar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He isn't now, I don't think. I don't know where he is now. But yeah, I thought you meant was he here when I came. Yeah, the Aspislets were rumors about the same time as my folks came to the valley. Mm-hmm. And they lived up near Campbell.
Is there one that in the past that you really find interesting in this area?
Telegraph trail and so forth actually were over by the time I came on the scene. That probably would have been
What made us come here rather than somewhere else?
Well, I think we had a scenery. Once my mom and I came up here, first summer, she couldn't wait to get back. It was so beautiful. They'd always been really quite wanderers before that. They lived in Manitoba and several different places. We came to Vancouver. Then we came to Burns Lake and Yukon Valley Lake. My dad was a walker. But he wanted them. He really liked farming better. And then when he came, they really liked it. So they stayed here. My mom still lives over in the little town. She's 82.
Have you ever considered moving away?
Not really.
Really?
No. Norman was born here. In fact, it was interesting, actually. All the Hagen kids but him, he was the youngest of the Hagen.
Mm-hmm.
Born in the old Rich Memorial Hospital. Norman. And when the new hospital was built, born in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the plaster wasn't even on the lab yet when he was born there, so it was brand new. And then it's the one that was ripped down to build the one that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And our oldest son, Lars, was born in that hospital, the same one as his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then just when they were going to move into the new hospital, already built, just a month or so before they moved, Lars's oldest daughter was born in the old, the one. So there was three generations of our family born in that hospital. And Dr. Whiting delivered my own Lars and also Jacqueline, his oldest daughter. He delivered Lars when he first came, a couple months after he came, and then you remember he retired just when they were just moved into hospital. And so Jacqueline, he delivered her to.
Yeah.
So he delivered two generations in our family.
Yeah.
The same.
Mm-hmm. Were there any sports or teams that you were in?
No. I never was in anything like that.
Your husband was in?
No, I don't think so. His sister belonged to a ball team, the ladies' ball team from Kispyok's village. She used to always play with them and be on their team. But Norman never did. He was never that interested. He had to quit school pretty early too because the school closed down. And so then he went to work in the pole camp when he was only 14 for his dad.
Was that the Kispyok school he went to?
Well, had the little Kispyok Valley school right over here. It was on Haglund's Place. But then it got to be sort of enough kids for it to keep it open. Well, then later years, when there'd be more kids, they opened it again. And that's what I did for a few months. I filled in for Mrs. Luxton when she was sick, teenager, just before I was married.
Mm.
I taught that school for a while. I had Wilfred Lee, and Terry Luxton, Aaron Jenkins, all those kids and all the heads too. There was only about nine in the school. Jeannie Neighbor, they were living up the valley here. And so I did a couple different times at the school, filling in for Mrs. Lunches. That's Terry and Kate Jenkins.
Yeah.
You said you went as far as grade 10. Is that as high as you went then?
Well, I was actually going to a church boarding school, because I was a Seventh-day Adventist, and so I didn't go to school here at all. Just went. Now, I probably could have gone, if I had wanted to go to school, I couldn't have gone to Hazleton any further than grade 10. Hazleton School did 11 and 12 then. And they sent the kids you went and stayed with a relative where there was a school somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
or they sent you to a dormitory at Prince George and paid for you to stay at the dormitory and go to a school in Prince George. But my folks didn't want me to do that. And anyway, but I met him that first summer, so I kind of lost it in school. Got married the next fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I never did go to school here.
But the school goes to 11-12 now here in Hazleton.
Yeah, high school does. Mm-hmm. They have a graduating class. I forget just the first graduating class from grade 12 was. It's quite a while ago now.
I think it was its 30th anniversary this year, I think they said.
Yeah.
Things seem like that at the
I wouldn't be surprised, because it was a couple of years after we were married. Long. In fact, there was a teacher by the name of Mr. Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That got the thing upgraded and got some work so the kids could finish here. And he came and helped me a bit, because only having grade 10 and then in school over here, it only went up to grade 8. But I just was subbing because I had no training or anything. But the school board found to get teachers then, as you can imagine. They certainly wouldn't hire a grade 10 now to teach school, but he came out and helped me some.
How about police protection?
Yeah.
Same amount of police protection as they do now and then?
No, there wasn't many. At one time, I think there was in Hazleton maybe only one police. Of course, I can remember before the RCMP came to BC. When I still, before I was married, when we lived out east, the RCMP hadn't come yet to BC. There was just people. And there was one particular one I should let known and tell him, Tony West, who was a well-known police, but I'm sure he wasn't RCMP. He was a BC police.
Somebody told us about his white horse. That somebody made his horse green one time.
Well, that could be. Norman would know kinds of stories about things like that because he was born here.
Right. What did you do on Halloween?
Well, I never did anything on Halloween because I was already 18 and came here. But our kids used to do a little bit going around trick-or-treating. Dare do that with people putting razor blades and pouring everything, but that type of thing was unheard of then.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fun time for kids.
Were there any Halloween parties? Or?
I don't know. There probably was, but I don't remember ever really going to any. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the valley here, though, people would have just a little social evening house party. Mm-hmm. My friends over and play games and things. That was fun. Often. People hardly ever do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But they still do. But the main social thing in the valley was visiting. You know, people would just go on Sunday afternoon and visit, and usually where you went to visit, they'd ask you to stay for supper. Then maybe the next week, somebody would come and see you. And that, there was a lot of visiting like that in the valley here.
Mm.
In the early days when I was new here. Mm.
What way have people's attitudes changed? Like, are they less friendly now, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think a lot less socializing and going back and forth. People in the valley keep to themselves now. The family groups, I think, still get together more. But in the old days, everybody knew everybody better, and now it's more like town. You know, in town, people, in the city, you can not even know your next door neighbors, you know. And I think it's more like that now. It's more. In the old days, everybody knew. Went back a lot more.
Mm.
Did you find that you had a closer knit family back then than you do now? You had more freedom and stuff like that now than you do then?
Not in our family, because Arjun has made us keep much more close-knit family mm-hmm. groups and everything. And then in our particular family, we gave three older married kids each a piece of land, added a quarter of our land here between them, and so they live close. Mm-hmm. So our family is still very close and very married together.
But with other families, maybe some friends of yours, or
I think it, people in general, the families are much more loose now. But we've never had a TV either, so I think Vision sort of babysits the kids and stops the conversation. You know, people don't have any time for each other. It's different. I think maybe that's why we don't visit as we used to, because when you go to visit, everybody mostly watches TV,
mm-hmm.
and you don't visit it. I know when we've gone to see relatives and things, we're always kind of amazed.
You're just sitting around.
Yeah, and you don't leave it. But we've never had TV. Probably partly for that reason. I just never thought it was kids for family relationships or anything. I think it had a lot to do with the great upsurge of violence. In fact, I think it contributed heavily to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you go and visit people, you sit and watch TV, or do you go off and...
most people who have TV, we don't bother visiting. Because you can't.
Incorporated when you came here?
No.
Really?
It's not too many years since Hazel was incorporated. We started having a mayor.
Yeah.
I don't exactly remember when. I think we were living up in Tulum.
Mm.
But it's not that many years.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time Hazel did?
Not really, because I'm a bingo player either.
Mm.
It's gotten to be quite a popular pastime in Hazel's name. It's been around for a while though. See advertisements and everything.
Mm.
One thing that we used to do in the valley quite every fall was have a turkey shoot.
Mm.
And that was how we raised money to help build the hall and to get the piano for the hall and things like that. For the community. We almost always had a turkey. I guess they still do, but we've kind of gotten away from it. We lived in town for quite a while, and so we kind of got away from the community association in the valley here and everything. Since we've moved out here, we've been so busy we never even got involved again. Most of the old valley people that we knew really well didn't know either. It's mostly the younger
mm-hmm.
that do the things now. Actually, it's still on us, really. We should be more involved in it. But we never have since we came back.
Do you think unemployment was a problem around here?
Yeah.
Years ago? Not really. And if it was just part-time.
What would people do if they didn't find a job?
Oh, grow a garden. Or sometimes if people were really having a hard time, the social assistance the same as they can now.
How would they go about getting that?
Well, they had to go to Smithers, Shores, as it's called, and now an office right in Hazleton. But in those, in the early days, it was absolutely magical. And all placing of children in foster homes and everything was done in Sears. I remember once we kept a little foster girl for a while. My sister had her first, and then he had her. And Mrs. Minota at Smithers was the social worker. So in our family, my husband always had a funny joke. He wanted to sympathize with the kids. If I'd gotten after them about something, he'd always say, "We'll have to call Miss Minota. Call the welfare. Get me in, just in fun." And Christine is out here as a foster daughter to us now. And the social worker told me that, strangely enough, Mrs. Minota ill in the human resources as after all these years. I would have thought she was long dead, but she's still there. And that's 22, 23 years when we had the other foster girl. And Mrs. Minota is still there. Some things don't change. Okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell?
Oh. Just offhand, I don't think. After you're gone, I'll probably think of lots of things. If you do come and interview Norman, he could probably tell you a lot about the earlier even in the valley, and growing up and going to the school over here and with all the woods and the loves and all them.
Maybe mention it to him and maybe inform us back and see whenever it comes.
Because he knows lots of little things about the people and happenings and everything.
Okay.
He did.